Conversations with the Past, Present, and Regenerating Democracy, the Ethiopia Chapter. This episode marks the close of Season 3 of the Let's Talk Human Rights podcast, exploring the theme on transitional and restorative justice. What a journey it has been, taking us through three countries and looking at their transitional justice mechanisms and stories to bring about the unity and conversation around democracy and peacebuilding initiatives. Very importantly, in this episode 3, we delve into why the mechanisms and promotion of transitional justice are relevant and necessary. Taken from an excerpt written by Dr. Marchet Tadese Tesema, titled Dealing with the Legacies of Repressive Past, Transitional Justice in Transitional Ethiopia. Ethiopia has seen different forms of transitions. These include the imperial regime to the Derg in 1974, from the Derg to the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front, the EPRDF, in 1991, and most recently, in 2018, from the EPRDF to the Prosperity Party, the PP. Ethiopia and Ethiopians missed the opportunities to come to terms with their repressive past and thereby democratize the country not once, but at least twice. Arguably, the most opposite time to kickstart the onset of democracy in Ethiopia was post the Derg transition. After a little less than three decades, Ethiopia and Ethiopians are again on a transitional path, which is undoubtedly an opportune time like no other to set the democratization process of the country on the right path. Let's fast forward to the period 2020 to 2022. In another article published by the Wilson Center, titled Transitional Justice and Reconciliation Processes, Examining Ethiopia and Somalia, it reports that in November 2022, the government of Ethiopia and the Tigray People Liberation Front signed the Pretoria Peace Agreement, ending the two-year civil war in Ethiopia's northern region. The peace agreement included the pledge to initiate the transitional justice process. Through the negotiations, both parties acknowledged the need for reconciliation, healing, and addressing decades of historical and political grievances in Ethiopia. Following the peace agreement, the Ministry of Justice formed the Transitional Justice Working Group of Experts, the TJWGE, marking the start of Ethiopia's first ever transitional justice process. This process sought to address both current and past violations and grievances, with the goal to bring the country to lasting peace and democracy. However, despite all of these efforts, atrocities continue to plague and threaten the country's peace-building and reconciliatory processes. It is estimated that more than 600,000 people have been killed in this two-year period. There were allegations of rape, torture, and other atrocities on both sides of the conflict, which the United Nations Commission of Human Rights Experts on Ethiopia said could amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity.
We are confident in a relatively short period of time, we will accomplish our objectives and create a conducive environment for life to return to normalcy for our citizens in Tigray.
But the Tigrayan people have actually spent the past year fearing for their lives. The power struggle pitting Abiy's government forces and regional militias against Tigrayans have left them cut off from the rest of the country.
The fighting followed years of growing tensions between the Ethiopian federal government, led by Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, and leaders of Tigray's ruling political party. Government forces were soon joined by security forces from the Amhara region, which neighbors Tigray, as well as soldiers from the country of Eritrea.
In the first 7 months during which the Ethiopian government forces and allied troops from Eritrea controlled the Tigray region, they have committed the most horrendous war crimes, including weaponized sexual violence, massacres, man-made starvation. The conflict has killed thousands and left over 9 million people in humanitarian disaster.
It has been reported that Ethiopia has endured a long period of a culture of impunity against accountability for atrocities committed over time, and how prioritization of atrocities over others has stifled progress of real transitional justice and redress for victims in bringing about long-term peace. Hello and welcome to episode 3 of season 5's Let's Talk Human Rights. I am your host, Masechaba Masemola Wamdaga, on the season finale episode titled Conversations with the Past, Peace Building in a Time of Reckoning. In this conclusive episode, we look at the very distinct example of the Federal Republic of Ethiopia's history and current standing in line with the transitional justice in the time of inclusive democratic culture and transition. We also discuss and appreciate the ongoing peace-building efforts, such as the Transitional Justice National Dialogue and Disarmament, Demobilization and Reintegration, DDR, conversations on the past and ongoing peace-building measures. I am very excited to be joined in person by both my guests, Girma and Marshet, right here with me in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, where we are doing this recording. Mr. Girma Gadisa Tufa is a human rights lawyer and researcher focusing on the African human rights system and transitional justice. He holds a Bachelor of Laws from Haramaya University, Ethiopia, a Master's of Laws in Criminal Justice from the University of the Western Cape, South Africa, and a Master's of Law in Human Rights and Democratization in Africa from the University of Pretoria, South Africa. He had taught at Haramaya University and worked as an advocacy officer at Save the Children, African Union Liaison Office. Mr. Tufa has been actively involved in the transitional justice process in Ethiopia, including facilitating public consultation sessions and providing commentaries on television and print media. He has also contributed to several transitional justice forums at national and continental levels. Dr. Marshet Tadese Tesema is one of the leading most transitional justice experts in Ethiopia. He received his LLM from the University of the Western Cape in South Africa and his PhD in international criminal justice from Humboldt University in Berlin, Germany. He not only wrote both his LLM and PhD dissertations specifically on the prosecution of war crimes and transitional justice in Ethiopia, but has published a book and several other academic studies on the topics both in the context of Ethiopia and other African countries. Dr. Marshet is a former member of the Transitional Justice Working Group of Experts. In his capacity, he has played a key role as a lead drafter of the various operational documents of the National Consultations on Transitional Justice Options, reports of nationwide consultations, and also in crafting the National Transitional Justice Policy that the Council of Ministers adopted on 17 April 2024. Currently, he is the head of the Criminal Law and Justice Department and an assistant professor of transitional justice and international criminal law at the Ethiopian Civil Service University. In addition, Dr. Marshet co-chairs the Transitional Justice Working Group of the African-German Research Network for Transitional Criminal Justice since December 2018 to date. Gentlemen, indeed an honor and privilege to have you here with me to have this very important conversation.
Thank you, Shama.
Thank you for having us.
Seemingly, the main discourse emanating for transitional justice in Ethiopia focuses largely on the events from 2020. However, how far back should we go in terms of historical context? How did it get started and where is it now standing in terms of implementation? Marshet, if you could take this for me first.
Thank you, Shaba. This is a very interesting issue for a context like Ethiopia because, as you might know, for a very long time, the approach in Ethiopia as far as how to deal with the past, what to do to the legacies of atrocious past, was to let bygones be bygones, to not awaken the ghost of the past, to forget and forgive. In other words, for a very long time, the approach that the government adopted was not to confront the past, not to reckon with the legacies of the past. In fact, there was a state approach on the fact that there was no need to reconcile. Who are we reconciling? But that has changed over the years. Of course, this is not unique to Ethiopia. In many transitioning societies, there was a dilemma and dichotomy about how to deal with the past. Some preferred not to awaken the ghost, to forget the past, to say let bygones be bygones, but that has not worked in many transitioning societies following conflict or authoritarian system. So many has confronted their past based on accountability, reconciliation, truths, and the never again principles. So in Ethiopia as well, in the past, two attempts were made as far as transitional justice processes are concerned. The first one was the post-1991, following the fall of the Derg regime. The then government adopted what we call extensive accountability mechanism as a means of coming to terms with the legacies of past injustice. So a special prosecution office was established then in 1992. 5,000 plus individuals were prosecuted. 3,000 were convicted for serious crimes, including genocide. That was one major approach adopted in the post-1991 transition. The second attempt was the post-2018 transition in Ethiopian context, where the new government adopted a relatively wider range of transitional justice mechanisms. For the first time in Ethiopian history, National Reconciliation Commission was established in 2018. Amnesty was given to some individuals through Proclamation Act passed by the parliament. So some transitional justice mechanisms were adopted, as I said, in the post-2018 transition. But again, the post-1991 and post-2018 TJ processes, transitional justice processes, could not bring the desired results. It could not properly uncover, unravel the truths about what had happened, the root causes of the violations, the circumstances that led to the violations. It could not repair broken, severed relationships among Ethiopians. So another transitional justice process was ignited around 2021. So the government again decided to initiate a proper comprehensive transitional justice processes that draws lessons from past incomplete, inadequate measures. The past TJ processes in Ethiopia was not participatory. It was not based on inclusive consultative processes. The mechanisms were incomplete in a sense. As you know, transitional justice as a mechanism of dealing with the past, fostering durable peace, has to adopt a comprehensive, holistic transitional justice measures, which includes truth-seeking and reconciliation measures, which includes accountability mechanisms, which include reparative measures, and also measures to guarantee non-repetition of similar violations and injustices. When one looks at the two past attempts that I just mentioned in the Ethiopian context, the post-1991 and post-2018, they were incomplete. The mechanisms were focused on very limited measures, pillars of transitional justice. They were not based on consultative participatory processes. That's why the post-2021 processes have to draw lessons from past failed attempts, international experiences, and all that. So the context in the post-2021 was completely different from the two past attempts in many ways. So the government, based on recommendations by experts, decided to chart transitional justice measures based on national comprehensive policy. The policy has to be adopted based on consultative participatory processes. So that process was given to what we call transitional justice working group of experts. So the government, the Ministry of Justice particularly, established in November 2022, a transitional justice group of experts that was composed of technical experts from universities, from civil societies, and also other government institutions. So the working group was mandated to lead the crafting of national transitional justice process based on consultative participatory approach. So that group first prepared what we call transitional justice policy options document that served as a basis for the nationwide consultations. That document was released in January 2023, and the working group conducted nationwide consultations across Ethiopia from March 6 up to September 2023. So 80-plus consultations, 80 consultations with different stakeholders, victims, civil societies, experts, international actors were conducted. And finally, the group submitted a draft transitional justice policy to the government in February 2024. And finally, as you know, the Council of Ministers adopted a national transitional justice policy in April 2024. This policy is the first of its kind. It's based on holistic integrated transitional justice processes, which means there is accountability mechanism, there is a truth-telling and reconciliation mechanism, there is a reparation pillar, and also measures to guarantee non-repetition. So that policy is crafted based on nationwide consultations, but of course one has to really take stock of how far the policy takes into account the wishes, aspirations, and the views of Ethiopians. So that is how the current transitional justice process in Ethiopia, which has now moved from policy adoption to implementation stage, has came about.
I think it's so important for you to set this context, Marshet, around the three different phases and also the complexity of how the three different conflicts at any particular time also served the reasons of why they took place. And also why failed attempts in the past were maybe not as successful as what is currently being addressed through the current mechanisms. Girma, as we think about leading causes, could one attribute the ethnic federalization of the country to be the polarizing factor in the country's stability?
Thank you, Jaba. I think that's a very critical question that requires very independent and rigorous research, I would say. But overall, if you look at federal state structure in Ethiopia, I would say it is a very critical stage in 1991 when they decided to have a federal structure. And that actually enabled the nations, nationality in the country to have the right to self-determination. So the federal state structure per se in itself cannot be considered as the major contributing factor to the existing situation. And in fact, I would say it was a move towards democratization, because what we used to see before that was a centralized state structure where people don't have the power to make decisions at the local level. So everything was made and decided at the center, and at the grassroots level, you are just there to implement what's already decided. So blaming what is happening in the country to federal state structure or existing federal systems would be a reductionist approach, because the problem, the political, socioeconomic problem in the country is very complex, and it goes beyond federalism. It goes to how the economic structure of the society is, how the societal cohesion, social relationship in the past has been. However, the way the federal state structure was implemented was a problem, because federalism was supposed to be a system of governance where there is a devolution of power.
Absolutely.
To the contrary, it was implemented in a very centralized way and with the dominance of one or two parties, I would say single party at the center, deciding everything for everybody. And the regions were not really autonomous as they were supposed to be, because the constitution provides that guarantee. But in the implementation of it, there is, I would say, what I call implementation deficit in terms of implementing transitional justice. So one-party domination, domination of maybe I would say also preference of ethnicity at the cost of meritocracy was also there. So as opposed to establishing an egalitarian society where everybody is measured because of what they contribute to the society, there were tendencies of ethnic profiling and alignment along that line. So that was the biggest problem, I would say. Yes, federalism has contributed to actually inflating the price of ethnicity in the political landscape, I would say that. But the current situation, the problem the country has, goes beyond federalism. Has federalism contributed to it? Yes. Not because of the structure it has, but because of how it was implemented.
Absolutely. I think, as a leading question, or rather a leading comment to that, if one thinks about from a fragile state to what is in some cases being termed as a failing state, how does this impact the process of transitional justice in Ethiopia? In other words, what have been the process-related issues related to transitional justice in Ethiopia, which maybe could be termed as it being deemed as a failing state? If you could take this again, Girma.
There are a lot of issues that need to be taken into consideration when we see the process that has been through. As Dr. Marshid has been stating, the transitional justice process to date has been consultative, especially in relation to the people who are affected by the conflict. But as we stand now, the political instability and the ongoing conflict in the country will definitely have an impact on how we are going to implement the transitional justice mechanisms. Again, there are concerns around inclusivity of the transitional justice process. Some political organizations have already boycotted the process, and there is a need to bring them on board, because then you would have an inclusive transitional justice process, not only in terms of the issue that we address, but also in terms of the political groups that have been playing role in this country. So if you leave out, for example, the party that are already fighting, the armed groups, implementation of the transitional justice policies where these groups are active would be practically difficult, if not impossible. So the issue of inclusivity is there. A lot has been done in terms of trying to bring them on board, but still there are parties, political groups that are not included. So that has to be rectified, because it will definitely have an impact on the legitimacy of the process, but also on the implementation of the outcomes at the end of the day. The other issue would be the logistical issues. You would say, for example, if you're not able to travel to some parts of the countries and undertake the TJ measures, then definitely you will be able to implement the transitional justice measures in certain areas while leaving out others. So the geographical scope of it would also be a problem. So the economic impact of the conflict would also be something that we need to consider in terms of taking into account the fact that transitional justice is a very resource-intensive process. So I would say instability has its own impact. Inclusivity is an issue that has been on the discussion radar and in the political discourse as far as transitional justice is concerned. But I would also add ongoing conflict would have impact on the logistical issues of implementing transitional justice process itself.
Indeed. Marshet, as we take the conversation looking inwardly and rather outwardly, how did the role of international actors like traditional justice value, civil society and media, the IGAD, Intergovernmental Authority on Development, as well as the African Union through the Pretoria Agreement, being effective, especially towards a truth and reconciliatory process?
Before I start reflecting on the question you just raised, I would like to add some points on what Girma has stated. Yes, I mean, in Ethiopia, as you know, there are still some ongoing hostilities in some parts of the countries. And definitely this could have its own adverse impact on the inclusive, consultative, participatory implementation process. I think one thing that has to be really well stated is that, unlike the past processes, the current transitional justice process has started with, I would say, consultative, participatory exercise. The past TJ processes we had have really been top-down exercises. Yes, the crafting process of the current policy is not perfect. There are some limitations, as expected, because we are talking about transitional justice, peace-building mechanisms in the wake of conflict, or even in the context of ongoing conflict. So it cannot be it's not going to be a perfect process, just like in any transitioning societies. It is very important to create enabling environment, conducive environment for proper implementation of transitional justice. And also we are now in a, I would say, preparatory stage for implementation. We have not started implementation in Ethiopia. The policy was adopted in April. Now the government is in the process of preparing the enabling laws that will roll out the various transitional justice pillars based on the policy itself. So we have not yet fully entered the implementation stage. We are about to go into that phase, stage. But one has to ask, given the ongoing conflict in some parts of the country, Is Ethiopia ready for implementation of all transitional justice pillars, which are the low-hanging fruits for us to start implement and maybe delay or postpone the others based on the context? I mean, in any context, there are conflicts, there are ongoing instabilities when you are trying to adopt transitional justice, because we needed transitional justice because the conventional mechanism, the ordinary justice system, could not help us deal with them in a proper way. So there is always some level of fragility, some level of instability in a country going through transitional justice process, because it is an extraordinary mechanism for extraordinary crisis or problems. This is a country with long history of unaddressed injustice, long history of historical violence, contradictions about past violations. So to some extent, the problems are expected, but one has to really identify the low-hanging fruit for the ongoing Ethiopian context, mm-hmm. particularly when we start implementation. Now, there are also different actors on the Ethiopian TJ processes. As you know, the conflict in the northern part of the country came into its conclusion as a result of COHA, the cessation of hostility agreement between the Ethiopian government and the Tigray Liberation Front. That agreement clearly stated that the injustices, the violations that had been committed in the context of the war had to be addressed through a properly crafted national transitional justice process. So there is also a legal obligation on the part of the Ethiopian government to deal with the violations committed in the context of the North conflict through transitional justice process. IGAD, African Union have had critical roles in facilitating that agreement and also the implementation of the agreement itself. Generally, in transitional justice processes, international actors have stake, because this is a matter that deals with gross violations, serious violations. It is obligation of all international actors to ensure proper justice truths around this. So they have played key roles in the Ethiopian TJ processes, particularly in the crafting of the policy. The African Union has supported the crafting of the policy by providing technical support, by organizing some consultations with international experts. Some international donors and UN agencies have provided technical support, financial support in the crafting of the policy. And the policy also acknowledged really the role of these stakeholders for proper, full-fledged, inclusive implementation of transitional justice process in Ethiopia. The last one is the role of civil societies and traditional justice system. As you know, one of the key elements of transitional justice process is context specificity. So unless we properly utilize the traditional justice system in the truth-seeking process, in the reconciliation processes, it cannot be really context-specific and locally and nationally owned. So the policy acknowledges that aspect and gives really a place for the traditional justice system to play key roles, particularly in ensuring proper uncovering of the root causes of the conflict, the extent of the conflict and the violations in reparation processes and all that. So that is a very critical issue. I mean, we are talking about a very big country, the second most populous country in Africa with 120 plus million. It's not like maybe the Gambia, or it's not like the Sierra Leone or even the South African kind of thing. This is a very big country with a different pluralistic kind of elements within the society. So there are also diverse traditional justice system. There is also issue around compatibility with human rights standards of this traditional justice system. But we cannot deny that they have critical, important role in the Ethiopian transitional justice process, and the policy acknowledges that. Civil societies have irreplaceable role for the effectiveness of transitional justice process. I think one of the challenges in the Ethiopian transitional justice process is the lack of proper understanding around the basics of transitional justice and what to expect from transitional justice. This can only be addressed through proactive engagement of civil societies in terms of creating, you know, awareness, in terms of creating sensitization, in terms of ensuring the victim-centeredness of the process, in terms of monitoring, you know, this process. Yes, the policy has given the civil societies a space, but the civil societies in Ethiopia have their own problems. Some of the problems are space-related, the civic space. Some of the problems are capacity-related problems, resource-related problems. I have not seen civil societies playing active, critical roles they are supposed to play in the Ethiopian context. But I cannot blame the civil societies for that, because there are multidimensional reasons for why they are not really playing their critical important role. If you see in other transitional justice process, civil societies were actually the drivers of even the transitional justice process. Yeah, but in Ethiopian context, let alone driving the TJ process, they have not played a proactive role in terms of sensitizing, in terms of doing some outreach works, in terms of monitoring and evaluating the processes. But as we are entering the implementation stage, I really have to say that the civil society should play their irreplaceable role. This does not mean that they have to accompany the process. They have to always depict a rosy picture of the process. They have to play a watchdog role of the process so that it is victim-centered, so that it is human rights compliant, Chapa.
Marshad, on that note, I'm glad you actually are broadly speaking to the role of civil society and their role in actually advancing the role of transitional justice and reconciliatory processes. As we think about policy mechanisms and also the implementation, which is something which is yet to start happening and taking shape, you speak about victim-centered approach. Is there trust by the Ethiopian people in the transitional justice process in Ethiopia? And how has redress been addressed in light of their experience in overcoming the past? Have victims been adequately addressed, given that it's been reported that there's little trust in the process and the active role of civil society playing here, I suppose, as something that you've just mentioned now? Girma, if you could take that question for me, please.
Marushet earlier alluded to more than 80 consultations were held throughout the country with different segments of the society when the technical group of experts on transitional justice were drafting the transitional justice policy. I would say, I think the transitional justice policy adoption is a very unique approach in the context of Ethiopia, because not every country that has been through conflict has got that opportunity. And to my knowledge, I don't know if there is any country that has got transitional justice policy. Countries just went to crafting the legislations that would enable them to implement transitional justice mechanisms.
And that is important to note.
Exactly. The case of Ethiopia is a very unique thing. The African Union has got a transitional justice policy, but it is not an implementing organ. At the country level, I would say Ethiopia is the only country with a transitional justice policy, and that is a very unique scenario. And the process that led to the adoption of that transitional justice policy was very consultative. In addition to the technical working groups, the Ethiopian Human Rights Commission also played a very critical role in terms of engaging with various groups in the society. And actually, in fact, they came up with reports that contained the results and the outcomes of public consultation. So there was public consultation here and there. From that, you would really see that people are eager to see the implementation of the transitional justice mechanisms in the country. But of course, the question that we need to ask is, would the existing structures be capable of implementing it? Would they be trusted? So, for example, one of the critical issues that have been raised through the consultations is whether the existing judiciary is the right judiciary to deal with the criminal justice issues. And the technical working group on TJ suggested the establishment of a special court, and that actually, later, it was by the government, it was changed to special chamber within the existing court. So the question that we need to ask is not whether the public has trust in the process. It is whether actually they have trust in the existing institutions in terms of effectively and implementing the transitional justice in a very genuine way. So you would already see the fact that they are participating in the process, the fact that they're putting out their concerns and their quests and their grievances indicate that they are actually looking forward toward the implementation of the transitional justice mechanisms. I would say at the policy level, what we have now is a very comprehensive document. It has all the elements of transitional justice, starting from prosecution, truth and amnesty, conditional amnesty, of course, reparation, institutional reform. If we are able to really implement these mechanisms in a way that is very victim-centered, participatory, then definitely the public trust would start coming out. And also the way you gain public trust is actually through being transparent through the processes, you let information out. So one of the challenges that's been there is withholding information has been a problem. So if you see during the public consultation, the policy options were out throughout the country and people were able to participate. I would say the same should be done when now we are implementing and drafting the enabling legislation. The Ministry of Justice is currently busy with drafting the enabling legislations. So consultation should also be held around those legislation. Through that, you will definitely build public consensus, I would say. So it's about being transparent, putting the options out, consulting with society that has already been there through the consultative process in the past. So there is public trust, I would say, but there's a need to do more in terms of putting out what is being done on the media, especially. I would really like to emphasize the fact that in as much as the government is doing a lot, the media is actually not taking up that and bringing it to the public. Because this is the responsibility of the media, actually.
Perhaps because it is actually the most effective and fastest way of getting the education and awareness out. Yeah.
It's not just the work of the Ministry of Justice. It's not just the work of the political parties. This is a nationwide process that requires contribution from everyone.
Are the media also being prepared and also equipped to be able to play that role? Because I think that's an essential part of the conversation.
That's a critical question. I would say there was a consultation with the media group. There was briefing with the media. But the same issue that Dr. Marishet Ariel raised about capacity and familiarity with the transitional justice element is a problem. So in my engagement with the media, I've seen that the concept of transitional justice is actually an alien concept to some of the media people. So the newness of the issue is a problem, one. Second, it's a capacity issue. Third, in the past, the media space was a problem. Media were not operating freely. So the hangover from the media restriction in the past is still there. So if you ask to what extent our media are freely engaging with political issues, justice-related issues, you would really question it. So there is still there is a need from the government side, from the Ministry of Justice, to actually invite media, brief them, capacitate them, train them, because media can play a very critical role in terms of even mobilizing the society. So there is a gap. There is a little bit of effort. Some media are reporting on it, but I don't think the effort made so far is enough, and there is a need to do that. Media coverage is the way you reach people, whether it is newspaper, online media, TV or radio. If we mobilize our media and do public sensitization and awareness-raising programs, that would really bring the transitional justice concept from being a political issue to a societal subject matter.
Did you want to add to that, Marshad? I saw you...
Yes, I think you raised a very, very critical question in relation to any transitional justice process, which is the issue of trust. In a context of transitioning societies, what is always missing and what transitional justice really tries to restore is the issue of trust, because what conflict does, what repression or authoritarian system does is to sever relationships, to affect the social relationships and the cohesion, which really in a way replaces social cohesion trust with mistrust. So now there is a need to repair that. As I alluded to earlier, in Ethiopian context, there is ethnic dimension, religious dimension of conflicts over the years. So there are cleavages along different lines. So some level of suspicion, skepticism is expected about this process because we are just starting. The reason why actually we did a nationwide consultation was to really build that trust in the process, to build what we call transitional justice constituency, so that we generate constituency which really look after this process, which question, monitor, evaluate where this process is heading. So we have tried to do, the consultation has tried to do, the 80 plus consultation across the nation. with different segments of the society has contributed to really build that trust. But still there are gaps, there are limitations because of the fact that there is no continued sustained outreach sensitization about the transitional justice process in Ethiopia. The media is not doing that. The civil society is not doing that. As Girma said, transitional justice process is a multi-sectoral, a multi-stakeholder processes. We cannot leave it to the government. The government cannot create awareness on all matters. The government cannot sensitize the public. In fact, this is the critical role that the civil society and the media has to play. The first consultation that we did in March 2023 was with media and civil society. We, as technical working group, tried to give different capacity building sensitization exercise, but because of many reasons, because of multifaceted reasons, capacity, resource, space, civic space-related issues, the media, the civil societies are not really playing that critical, much-needed role of building transitional justice constituency, promoting this idea of transitional justice, popularizing the in and out of the policy itself, the limitation of the policy. I cannot say the policy is a perfect document. There are limitations because as much as transitional justice is a peaceful means of making peace with legacies of the past, it's also a political exercise. It cannot be free from politics. It has never been free from politics anywhere. The issue is, how can we really use this mechanism to address some of the serious concerns, needs, and aspirations of victims which are affected with egregious human rights violations in the context of conflict? I mean, you might have heard about the impacts of the recent conflicts in Ethiopia. Women, children were at the receiving end of the gross human rights violations. And we have to really find a way of at least addressing their concern, addressing their demands, the impacts that the conflict really created on them. So transitional justice process in any context can only be effective, successful, if those different stakeholders, national, international, government, non-governmental, play their critical roles. That's, in fact, what I call the missing element in the Ethiopian TJ process, because if you don't have really a proactive, solid, robust civil societies and also media which can proactively claim the space and play their critical, irreplaceable role for effectiveness of transitional justice process, it could create a serious problem. But I believe now the medias and the civil societies are trying to create a network, a consortium, around these transitional justice issues so that they play their critical role in ensuring effectiveness of this transitional justice process. Yeah, Chaba.
Thank you for that, Girma and Marshad. Marshad, I want to just stay with you on this one. As we think about the ongoing state of conflict and fragile peace in Ethiopia, I was in Mekele to conduct some interviews with people who have been directly impacted by the conflict in the state of Tigray. And, you know, one really has to think about the harrowing stories that are coming out of there and the experiences that some are still enduring to date. So my question is, as we think about what the process looks like ultimately, we think about the holistic approach, what does the preservation and collection of evidence gathering and documentation, as well as the structures of investigation, pair up to the transitional justice process while peace building efforts still ensue?
This is a very interesting point, because one of the mechanisms that is envisaged by this national transitional justice policy of Ethiopia is accountability measures and the mechanisms to replace impunity with proper accountability and justice. By the way, Uganda also adopted its national transitional justice policy. So Ethiopia perhaps is the second country in Africa to have a national transitional justice policy. So just to make that point. So in terms of documentation of the gross human rights violations, different attempts have been done by different stakeholders. For instance, the Ethiopian National Human Rights Commission has carried out multiple investigations in the gross human rights violation across Ethiopia, including in the conflict of northern Ethiopia. So the first report, in fact, that really comprehensively, I would say, depicted the atrocities committed in the context of that conflict is what we call the joint investigation report between the Ethiopian government and the Office of the High Commissioners of the UN. So there are different documentation and investigation carried out by Ethiopian Human Rights Commission, by the civil societies, but still there are, I think, critical works to be done in terms of preserving evidence, in terms of properly, you know, capturing and documenting the relevant evidence for proper, effective accountability processes. This is particularly relevant in a context where different transitional justice measures could be simultaneously implemented, or at least some of the measures could be delayed. You know, in Ethiopia now, it's not clear which transitional justice mechanism is going to be implemented first. If you have an ongoing conflict and hostilities, obviously it is very difficult to start with accountability measures, because that could destabilize, that could affect the already fragile peace setting. So perhaps you could have to focus on the low-hanging fruits, the less risky transitional justice measures, which could prepare the foundation, which could lay the foundations for the other pillars. So documentation is important. If we are not going to embark on accountability in a foreseeable future, documenting the evidence, keeping the testimonies and the memories of the victims alive is very important for effective accountability maybe in the coming years. Because in some countries, accountabilities were delayed. For instance, in Liberia, as you know, the Truth Commission was established maybe 15, 20 years ago, but they are only embarking on accountability now. So in Ethiopia today, although the policy does not clearly say accountability is going to be delayed or accountability going to be postponed, if the government decides to do that, documenting the evidence is very important at this stage. Even if it is going to be implemented now, unless you really properly document the evidence, unless you really capture the testimonies of those who have been directly affected, it could affect the effective accountability and the prosecution process in the future. But attempts have been done, as I said, by different entities, civil societies, Ethiopian Human Rights Commission, but I don't think that is enough in terms of really preserving and documenting the critical evidence for effective accountability.
Thank you, Marshad. And again, you've really rolled into the next question, which I wanted to raise. Girma, Marshad has spoken to the issue of accountability against impunity, and sometimes which of the better of the two evils. There is a fear that adopting criminal prosecution means that crimes can threaten the fragile peace and only perhaps encourage renewed violence. Is Ethiopia such a case, especially where some argue that Ethiopia is in a political transition ahead of transitional justice?
Then maybe the equally relevant question would be how, to what extent political transition is exclusive of transitional justice, actually? Aren't they mutually interdependent?
Please elaborate for us.
Of course, as already mentioned, transitional justice, in as far as it is a legal process, it is a political process. We cannot deny that.
Yeah.
It is the political willingness of parties that have been to conflict or atrocious past to come together, to consensus, to forge a better future. So there is no clear demarcation line where you say we are done with the political transition and now we start transitional justice. No, actually, transitional justice can be considered as an instrument to bring political transition. So often transitional justice is considered as a mechanism that you implement once you are done with conflict. No, why we don't use transitional justice actually to end conflict, to bring about transitional political transition. So yeah, definitely we are in a process of political transition, and much has been done in terms of, for example, bringing political parties that have been residing outside back home to the political space, starting from 2018. If you remember, in 2018, some of the armed groups that resided in neighboring countries actually willingly came back with their troops to the country. That is an indication that there is already an element of ongoing political transition. But also the question would be, when do we say there is an end to political transition? When in that demarcation line? Because as long as you have conflict, as long as you have political issues here and there, political transition is a continuous process until you go to a consolidated democracy. Yes, accountability, especially criminal accountability, might create a fragile situation. But the critical point is sequencing of the transitional justice mechanisms. So there is already a roadmap developed by the Ministry of Justice in terms of how to go about. But of course, definitely, it is not Moses' law. The roadmap might change as we go. But giving priority to the less sensitive transitional justice mechanisms is the way to go, so that the system itself doesn't collapse because of very sensitive political issues, especially in terms of going after the most responsible people, because some of these people might still be in the political structure. They might be
as
still
we've seen in other countries as well.
Exactly. The case of Chile, it could be the case of Liberia. In those countries, in fact, they tried to shield themselves from accountability through the transitional justice mechanisms. And that should not be the case. So we should be very careful in terms of what to start now and what to delay. The criminal accountability can be delayed depending on the readiness of the country. But again, we should not actually treat political transition and the transitional justice as a mutually exclusive element. They are intermediate, interdependent. They can happen together. Proper implementation of transitional justice would bring actually political transition. And political transition can also embrace transitional justice in itself.
Thank you for that very detailed response, because I think it's important to really speak to this, because ultimately, when we think transitional justice, people tend really to jump to that step as the one. And it's really good to speak to these sensitivities and how they impact the current situation. Lastly, I'd like to touch on something a little bit outside of Ethiopia, but one that does impact it. Can we also briefly analyze the nature of geopolitics currently and how Ethiopia is a political hotbed for the attention of the countries in the West and the East, and how this also may influence its transitional justice process? Girma, I'll start with you here.
I think it is very important to note that Ethiopia is one of the major political actors in the Horn. I think we should actually start from that. Given it is economy, given it is the role it has been playing in terms of ensuring peace and security in the region, including actually being part of the UN missions to some of the destabilized countries around the case of Somalia, I think Ethiopia is one of the major troop contributing countries to the African Union mission in the Somalia and also to the UN mission. So, yes, definitely Ethiopia is playing a critical role in the continent. But at the same time, there are also issues that are coming up now. One, the situation we are currently in with Somalia is the biggest problem, or it is portrayed as the biggest problem, because the country is trying to have a sea outlet, and that engagement has already been started in dealing with Somaliland. And also, to some extent, issues related to Eritrea is there, because at some point in 2019, the engagement between the two countries has been very peaceful, but it was affected by the conflict in the north, and now we can call it, it looks like a situation where we don't really engage that much as we are supposed to be. So all this can definitely affect the way we are going, the way we implement transitional justice. So it would create, I would say, a divided political attention. Because if you have a problem in your neighborhood, definitely that would have its own ramifications for your internal issues. And some of the countries also might try to meddle into your internal political situation, which will again have consequences and impact on how you go about in dealing with your own internal issues. Yes, in the geopolitics, there are ongoing diplomatic efforts to bring about consensus in terms of bringing, agreed upon ways of dealing with political issues, whether it is a sea outlet or whether it is what the dealing that we have with the issue that we have with Eritrea. But in as much as the external problem is an issue, I would say transitional justice is a more of nationally owned process. Yes, the geopolitics would have impact on it, but it has already been indicated in the transitional justice policy that this is a nationally owned process, which means basically more than what's happening outside, what's happening in the country would have its own impact on the effectiveness and genuineness of the process at the end of the day.
Thank you, Girma. Marshad, would you like to weigh in on that?
Yeah, a little bit. Girma has addressed the politics aspect of it, but within the context of transitional justice, the realities and what's going on in the Horn of Africa today seems to also call for a transnational transitional justice processes in a way, in a sense that there are some transnational conflicts that caused gross transnational violations. For instance, there is an involvement of the Eritrean force in the northern Ethiopian conflict. So the Eritrean force have committed serious crimes. They are still occupying some parts of Ethiopia. So this seems to really call for a transnational transitional justice process to address cross-border violations besides dealing with these tensions through political means. One final point, I think, is context has to dictate any transitional justice process. So as much as the Ethiopian TJ process has to respect international standards, international principles, the Ethiopian context, the realities on the ground, has to also dictate how this process really has to go about in terms of the point that Girma mentioned, to sequence the various pillars. Yes, when we say about perhaps delaying accountability, it doesn't mean that accountability is less important. In fact, it is an obligation of any state, be it in transitional or normal kind of circumstances. But if the context requires delaying, postponing some of the pillars, that has to be done, because the whole idea of transitional justice process, including the Ethiopian one, is to make peace through peaceful means. It's not really to regress into another atrocious, disastrous conflict. So the context has to dictate how transitional justice processes are implemented. One final point, transitional justice is a journey, it's a process. Just like transition into a democratic process, transitional justice measures, as much as they are ad hoc, interim, they are not going to be permanent, but they are a journey. I mean, reconciliation cannot be achieved in 2-3 years. It is a journey, it's a process which takes long period of years, and also it is a transgenerational, intergenerational kind of process. So I think the key important point in any transitioning society should be context has to dictate how we deal with legacies of atrocious past to foster durable, sustainable peace where we live in unity, in a sort of mutual respect and shared understanding.
In closing, to you both, some concluding statements. With quite invested time, instruments and mechanisms that we've been discussing in this conversation put in place for transitional justice to prevail in Ethiopia, can meaningful justice prevail for the past, more especially the present and the future, to achieve reconciliation? Marshet, you touched on this just now as you spoke about transitional justice being intergenerational and how this is a continuous process and it's a journey. So, in closing, if you could speak to what that means for meaningful justice to prevail as we look at the future. I'll start with you, Marshet, and then Girma, you can close.
I think one thing which has to be very clear is that for Ethiopia to be peaceful with itself, for Ethiopia to come out of this cyclic conflict, which is really wreaking havoc every now and then, peace-building measures are the necessary viable options. We have tried to make peace through violence, by removing one system and replacing that with another violent system. But now, as a nation, we have decided, I believe, to make peace through peaceful means. So justice doesn't always mean accountability, right? It has to be comprehensive. Truth is one very important thing. Reconciliation is one very important thing. So Ethiopia has to implement a comprehensive peace-building mechanisms, not just transitional justice. At the beginning of this podcast, you highlighted the various peace-building measures that Ethiopia is implementing. For instance, DDR. There is also national dialogue mechanism going on. It's collecting agenda as we speak. So Transitional justice is just one mechanism. It's not going to be a silver bullet for a long history of atrocious past in this country, but it is one very critical necessary means of ensuring proper, holistic justice and perhaps contribute to guaranteeing non-repetition of similar violations, non-repetition of similar conflict in Ethiopia. But for this to happen, we all have to play our critical roles. It's not something that we leave to the government. The international stakeholders, the national actors have to play their critical, irreplaceable role so that we get this third process right. We cannot afford to make this another failed attempt in the Ethiopian exercise of trying to make peace through peaceful means. Chaba.
Thank you, Marshed. Girma, your thoughts, please, in closing.
Thank you, Chaba. Yes or no, depending on how we go about it, whether transitional justice would bring a lasting peace and reconciliation in this country depends on how we are going to implement it. So the implementation of it is all, because we have this beautiful policy that can be celebrated by everybody, but it will remain a paper tiger until the government and all actors are committed to really implement it. It has been the case that people have been blaming only the government for failing to implement transitional justice. And I would actually also pose another question, that there is also a need to actually critique the armed groups for them to come on board. So critics should not be labeled only to the government side, because the government has been doing a lot in terms of coming up with laws and the policies. So the other side of the coin should also be seen. So the implementation of the transitional justice and its genuinity and legitimacy and whether it will achieve reconciliation depends on the genuine involvement and the contribution of everybody. And it should not be the case to put every obligation on the government. So if it is victim-centered, if the affected communities are properly consulted, if sequencing of transitional justice mechanisms is properly done by taking into consideration the reality on the ground, if the armed groups are actually invited and willing to come, because it takes, when we say political will, it's not only the political will of the government. It should also be the political will of other opposition political parties. In the absence of their political will, we'll continue in the same cycle. And I think this country has suffered a lot from conflict, and we should not pass the same conflict button to the next generation. And for us to do that, we should be really committed to implementing transitional justice. But again, should be underscored that transitional justice is not a panacea to all the problems that Ethiopia is having, but it's a critical step. We are at a very historical juncture where we can right the past wrong, or we can continue on the same path. And for us to actually say this is the cut off of history of violence, we should really be committed and implement the transitional justice process in a participatory and a victim-centered way. Thank you, Jabba.
Girma Marshed, thank you so much for joining me in this very critical and timeous conversation on transitional justice in Ethiopia. I'd like to thank you both for your time, your insights, the experience that you come with, and also the knowledge coming into this, and also to educate our listeners and those far and wide who, maybe for the longest of time, like myself, who've had to really research and orientate myself around what are the details, what is it? Because as you say, you can't rubber stamp all situations with the same tagline. It's not fair. And it's really important to appreciate those different nuances in the different contexts of what we're talking about. And for that, I really wish to say thank you. To round off this season finale of looking at transitional and restorative justice in countries having experienced conflict and those who are still overcoming it. So thank you for that.
Thank you to you too, Jabba, for covering this critical issue.
Yeah, thank you so very much. Namaskar, vielen Dank.
Vielen Dank, gern geschehen.
No room for letting bygones be bygones. In the wake of its third wave, Ethiopia is certainly a unique reference in the initiation and implementation of transitional justice processes. The shortcomings in the previous processes now allow it to reflect back and notably take stock of previous challenges to be able to chart a progressive, inclusive, transparent, and participatory way forward. It will be critical during the outlining process that the pillars and architecture which frame the processes address the challenges such as the capacity of the judicial system, implementation deficits, sequencing of transitional justice mechanisms, particularly the time of criminal accountability and synergy with ongoing peace-building initiatives. While placing reconciliation at its center, transitional justice should be implemented in a way that fosters a culture of intergenerational learning to ensure durable outcomes and lasting peace. Furthermore, looking at transitional justice and political transition as not being mutually exclusive, but rather as complementary efforts that can help in creating an egalitarian society and consolidated democracy. The story continues for this resilient nation of Ethiopia, and for sure an example that can support and help other nations going through same. My right, your right, our right. Humanity will and continues always to be for us all. This has been the third and final episode, season 5 of Let's Talk Human Rights, the FNF Africa podcast exploring various human rights issues. I have certainly enjoyed your company on the airwaves and for your unwavering listenership. I appreciate you. Please continue to listen to previous episodes on this podcast catalogue, and especially follow and watch the short documentaries for season 5 on the YouTube channel under the Friedrich Naumann Foundation's handle. Please remember to subscribe, like, and comment. Catch us in the new year 2025 for season 6. The Friedrich Naumann Foundation Sub-Sahara Africa, FNF, is an independent German organization that is committed to promoting liberal ideals and politics in Africa, such as human rights, the rule of law, democracy, innovation, digitization, and free trade. By conducting campaigns, media events, seminars, workshops, study tours, cultural happenings, and training courses, the foundation promotes human rights, including freedom of expression, freedom of the press, children's rights, and LGBTQIA+ rights, and engages against violence targeting women and capital punishment. If you are interested in our activities, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Simply check for Friedrich Naumann Foundation Africa. The links are in the show notes.